request on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Watch the skies.
Watch the sky. Keep looking. Yes. Tell this to everyone wherever they are. Hello. Привет. Добрый день. Фауака. Куянабанд. Аллоха. Ола. Джамбо. Ассаламу алейкум. So, Керес. Бонжорно. Алло. Чефач. Здрасти. Йо. Добро утро. Добар вечер. Good morning. Good evening. Good afternoon. Good whatever. I am your host, the Right Reverend Dr. Rowe. And you are listening to Reality Extraction Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Today is a Thursday. It is the second day of May. I want to say happy May Day to everyone. Welcome to spring. We're full on into spring, moving ever so closer to summer. So I hope everybody's enjoying the sun. Mayflowers. Is it Mayflowers? April showers bring Mayflowers. So it's time for the flowers to sprout. We're going to go over to the chat room and say hello to all of our friends here. We've got Monkey, Voltex, Zipster, let's see, let's scroll up, Knowing, Captain Fred, Jer Bear, SJ1, Saul Rosenberg, Nighthawk is also in the chat room, Share 6 is welcome back, Share 6, Stardust Man, Mer Bailey, Mario, wonderful show as always, and Surrey Sunflower, and that's about as far up as my scroller goes. Tonight we have, for the third week in a row, I have a guest. Yes, tonight's guest is very interesting. I think you will enjoy. I have with me Jerry Marzinski. And Jerry Marzinski is a licensed medical health practitioner. Basically, he's been in the psychiatric psychology field for like four decades, I think. He's also a licensed pilot. He's a scuba diver. He's an explorer of nature, things that go bump in the night. We always like that kind of curiosity. Anybody that listens to this show knows of my experience with bump in the night. We're going to kind of touch on that a little bit in a unique way tonight. Jerry has some very interesting experiences. He's worked with prisoners. He's worked with people that have been deemed schizophrenic or paranoid schizophrenic, people that have reported to see shadows and hear voices. But the medical industry says they're just hallucinations, it's just a chemical imbalance, and you need to just be locked up and be treated with drugs. So we're going to explore that tonight. Without further ado, it is my honor and pleasure to welcome to Reality Extraction Mr. Jerry Marcinski. Welcome to the show, sir.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And again, feel free to ask any questions that you may have or your listeners may have.
Yeah, anybody in the chat room, by the way, hi to Basement 5 and Meist 139. If you have questions, Tootsie as well, hello. If you have questions, come to revolution.radio to our chat room. And by the way, we're listener supported. None of us get paid for this, so it's all done by the heart. So anybody out there, feel free to drop a little buck on that. But I do want to give Jerry Marcinski the floor to speak on anything he wants. Get your message out there, and you have the floor, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, I'm not sure who I'm speaking to tonight, but I'm pretty sure it's not psychiatrists or psychologists. They have their own mind made up, and there's nothing going to change it, and it doesn't correspond to clinical reality at all. So it's no mistake that you're tuned into this broadcast tonight. If you're listening, you should be here, and not everyone is going to be capable of comprehending the information that I'm putting forth. And if I hadn't actually experienced some of these things myself over the last, 35-plus years, I wouldn't believe it myself. So I've been working with psychotics, paranoid schizophrenics, for close to 40 years. And I started off at one of the largest state hospitals on the planet, and that was Central State Hospital in Milledgeville, Georgia, back in the 1980s. And that place had been around since before the Civil War. And at one time, it had a population of over 12,000 patients there. At the time I got there, it had about 10,000. So for somebody who was interested in psychosis and insanity and what can go wrong with people's minds, psychopathology, that was, for me, that was like the biggest, mental health candy store on the planet. And what I found is that psychotics have an awful lot to teach us about how our minds actually work, if they would be listened to, which is something psychiatry and psychology do not do. And for hundreds of years, schizophrenics have been trying to tell us that the voices they hear in their head are very real. And psychiatrists and psychologists are going, no, they're hallucinations because we don't experience them. So, and nobody else does, so you must be crazy. So without doing even a single study anywhere, anytime, on the voices and what they are and whatever patterns they run, they have just arbitrarily, egotistically went, well, they are hallucinations because nobody else hears them and you hear them. They didn't study them even enough to know that these guys are hearing the same kind of messages repeating in patterns over and over again. Now, a hallucination is supposed to be random. It's sometimes negative, sometimes positive, sometimes makes no sense at all. It's just all over the place. But when you start looking at the voices that these people hear that other people cannot, they run very specific, predictable patterns. And that is not characteristic of a hallucination. all of us, I'm sure, at one point have wondered, what happens to these people? What's it like to be psychotic? What's it like to lose your mind? Well, these guys are part of us. They may be on the far end of the normal curve, down at the 1% or 5% level, but we're all connected. And you have had the same experiences they've had, only they have them much more intensely. So I'm going to give you a very quick example. Everybody's had this happen to them. You're walking along, minding your own business, and then all of a sudden, a horrible thought just barges into your mind, something that is so fantastic, so ugly, that you can't believe you had it. And you won't tell anybody about it because it's embarrassing. It's nothing you would do. It's nothing you would act on. Some people have, you know, they're driving in their car and they go, oh, I wonder what it would be like to swerve into the other lane or, beat this guy up or shoot this guy or do something nasty. And you think about it and it just sends chills up your spine. And then you're embarrassed you even had that thought. And you try to push it out of your mind as quickly as possible. And it just kind of gives you the willies. Most people don't think, where did that come from? You know innately, you know in your gut that that thought does not belong to you. It does nothing you would entertain. It doesn't belong in your thought stream. It's not a normal thought that you would have during the day. It just sticks out like a sore thumb, and it's malicious and nasty. Well, imagine that 24 hours a day, every day for the rest of your life, those kind of thoughts. That's what a untreated paranoid schizophrenic goes through. And it's those thoughts sound just like their own thoughts for the most part, but the content and the intent is very, very different. And when you start studying these things, you'll see it's a totally different world. So I'm going to kind of try to give you a first-class tour of what the psychotic mind is like, so you'll have some understanding of it, because you've had these things. You know, all of us have done something against our best interest, acting on a thought that comes into our mind that we, oh, well, that sounds like it might be a good idea, and then you find out it's really not. Okay. The way this starts with a lot of people is just like that thought that you may have had, the nasty thought, but they hear a voice in their head that sounds like one of their thoughts, but it doesn't have the same intention that they may have. And they come on in a lot of different ways. Some of them come on quick. Some of them come on very slowly. There is a very strong correlation between sexual, physical, emotional abuse as in the background. Usually they strike those who are already psychologically wounded the heaviest. And what they will do is they will tell you things about yourself and others that are lies. And most schizophrenics, when they start hearing them, they don't know what these voices are. They struggle with whether they are themselves or whether they're something else. The messages that they give them are so horrible that they don't want to tell anybody about them. They're embarrassing. They're malicious. They're nasty. And when they do try to tell somebody, look what happens. I mean, they start telling their friends, oh, hey, I hear this voice that is telling me to kill my grandmother, or I hear this voice that is telling me to chop the head off my cat, or stuff of that nature. And then you tell your friend that enough times, and they start, hey, man, there's something seriously wrong with this guy. I think I better kind of back off here. So they can't tell their friends because they lose them. People are freaked out when somebody who's starting to become psychotic tells them about these things. They go to tell their parents, and their parents haul them up before a psychiatrist. Psychiatrists go, oh, you're hearing voices. Well, okay, I know what that is. What are they telling? Oh, they're telling me bad things. Oh, well, you're paranoid schizophrenic, so your brain is broken. It's due to a chemical imbalance in your brain. There's only one thing we can do. You have to take these toxic antipsychotic drugs that are really like major tranquilizers that gork you out with horrible, horrible side effects. And they tell you, okay, you're now psychotic. You're going to be that way for the rest of your life. Your prognosis is poor. And they then tell you that the voices you're struggling with, whether you're trying to figure out whether they're your own mind or whether they're something else, because they don't seem to fit your normal thought stream, they out and out tell you, those are hallucinations. Those are not real. Those are due to your broken mind and a chemical imbalance. Now, when I first got to the state hospital, I saw that, you know, psychotics were doing some pretty strange things that made no sense to me. One of the first patients I heard of, at Central State, we had this giant central kitchen. So everybody would meet there for lunch. And that was like the, what do you call it, the grapevine. So there were no cell phones back then. They were just regular dial-up telephones. And the only way that information was passed about what was going on in different units was at the central kitchen, where everybody, all the staff, different staff, would get together and talk about what were happening. So in one of the units one of my friends was working at, one of the patients cut off his penis with a razor blade. And what they'd done was sewed it back on, and it was the talk of the lunchroom for weeks as to whether it was going to take or not. So that was the scuttlebutt. So my friend Ed worked at that unit where this guy had done that. And I said, Ed, you know, how about doing me a favor? Go look that guy up and ask him why he did that and come and tell me about it. So Ed did. He said, okay, I'll meet you at dinner. Met him there at dinner, and he said, yeah. I asked him, did you talk to this fellow? And he goes, yeah. And I said, well, what did he say? He said he didn't need it anymore. I went, okay. Like, holy cow. And there were many other things that psychotics were doing at that hospital that were very self-destructive. They were attempting suicide. They were slitting their wrists. They were attacking other people. They were smearing feces all over the walls. They were walking around talking to themselves, arguing with themselves, all this strange behavior that I didn't understand, and I didn't know where it came from. And I would pull up behind some of these guys and listen, and it was like listening to a one-sided phone conversation where you could hear the person talking on the phone, but you couldn't hear the person talking to them. And by the time I got to the state hospital, I'd already been through several experiences where I strongly mistrusted authority. And I mistrusted authority all through the 4 years of psychology I studied at Temple University. I mistrusted it all the way through the PhD program. I mean, all through master's, and I didn't trust fully what they were saying. And there were some experiences before I ever went into college that had me, like, skeptical of authority all the time. I mean, the Vietnam War, Nixon, the Watergate, all the lies being told on television, it was just one after another. So one of the things that when I was studying abnormal psychology, the professor said, okay, I want you to read an article and report on that article. And in that article was a psychologist who was writing, and he wrote, and this is before I had any access to a clinical population. I mean, undergraduates didn't have any access to check out what these professors were saying at all. You just couldn't get into a clinical population. So this psychologist was writing, if two psychotic patients met each other and they both had the same delusion, one of them would have to give way and adopt a different delusion. And even as an undergraduate, I went, well, you know, why would they have to do that? You got two crazy people that are, you know, both have the same. Why would one of them have to change? It just made no sense to me. But I couldn't prove it either. I had no way to check it out. And that's the way all of psychology was. For 4 years, you had to believe everything they said, and you have no way to check it out. Now, later, I found out that 90% of what psychologists publish is non-replicable. It cannot be repeated. And one of the things I saw when I got into graduate school is that in that area, in social psychology and psychology, the professors have to publish or perish. And it doesn't matter what they publish. They publish anything as long as they can get a publication. And, you know, once I heard that, it was like, oh, man, you know, how much of what I'm being taught is absolute bull. So I logged that one in, and then when I was working at Central State Hospital, I was doing my rounds once in one of the psychiatric units, and a new patient had arrived, and he was talking to himself, and I heard him and went over to him and asked him, hey, you're new. I hadn't seen you before. What's your name? You know, and he looked at me, and he goes, I'm Jesus Christ. And I went, oh, okay. And I looked at him, and with a stern voice, I said, no, you can't be Jesus Christ, because I am. And I'm like, okay, what's he going to do? You know, and I waited and waited, and then he kind of turned and he thought, and then he looked at me and he goes, okay, we can both be Jesus Christ. And then he trotted off. I went, well, if they lied to me about that, what else are they lying to me about? Yeah. Now, one thing I never saw in any of the textbooks were what these voices said. All they would say were these people had broken from reality, and these were auditory and visual hallucinations. They wouldn't say anything about what they were or how they operated. I don't think they knew. Now, this is schizophrenia is one of the top 10 health problems in the world. You know, there's 2.5 million in the U.S. alone. And worldwide, over 24 million people. It's you know, the leading cause of death in schizophrenics is suicide.
Now, so, there's different types of schizophrenia, right?
Yes, there are. Yeah, and the biggest class, and the one I investigated was the paranoid schizophrenic. You've got hebephrenics that just mumble garbage all the time. You've got catatonics that just stare into space. You've got undifferentiated kinds that are just, you know, ramble nonsense or just are in a coma all the time. But the biggest class, the one that affects most people, is paranoid schizophrenia, where they are very paranoid. And they're hearing voices or seeing things. So this information is...
These voices are telling them, like, that other people are against them. And I think that you know, it just adds to the paranoia. These voices are actually, you know, look, you know, these people are plotting against you. And
well, that's exactly right. The first time I noticed this was when, the psychiatrist just, you know, in their minds, the voices were hallucinations. But what I found strange was that if the voices were telling the patient to kill himself, then they would jump up like somebody stuck him with a hot poker. They'd fill that guy full of drugs and lock him down in a padded cell until the voices weren't telling him to kill himself anymore. So, for 90% of the time, the voices were hallucinations, unreal hallucinations. But if the voices were telling the patient to kill himself, they knew there was something to it, because when they start that, those patients were more likely to make a suicide attempt. And 4 out of every 10 schizophrenics will attempt to kill themselves. You know, their suicide rate is 5 to 10 times that of the general population. You know, so...
Did you ever get detailed information about things that these voices told some patients that you found out later was accurate information?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was years down the road after I figured out how to talk to them. But, yes. I'll go into some of that and then try to come back here to the timeline. So there was one where... this was when I was working in the state prison, and I was working with criminally insane inmates. And that was where I learned the most, because at the state hospital there was an unwritten rule that you not upset patients. And what I found was that when you started asking them about their voices, they didn't like that. They did get upset. And the 2 times I was caught by psychiatry asking these patients about their voices and what they said, I was ordered to stop immediately. I was told that I was making them sicker by doing that, and I was reinforcing their hallucinations. And, you know, that I said cease and desist. But by the second time, so after that, I stayed under their radar. I kept asking questions, but it was, you know, slow, and I didn't want to do anything to upset the patient where they would report to the psychiatrist and tell them I was asking about the voices. The second time I got caught, they threatened to write me up. So they did not want me asking about these things, and they didn't know anything about them themselves. But so I kind of had like a ball and chain with regard to investigating the voices while I was at the state hospital. What I did learn there is that they ran very specific patterns. They were negative, and toward the end of the 7 years I worked there, one gal told me that the voices were telling her not to take her medications. And that was a problem that we had with all the schizophrenics. They would just suddenly go off their meds. But getting back to things that they would tell patients that eventually came to be true, I was working with this one fellow where the voices told him, and on the prison yard, they pointed out to him, hey, you see that guy over there? He's going to assault you. You better watch out for him. So he told me the next time he came in, that he was in the bathroom. He had just taken a shower, and he was combing his hair. His hair was soaking wet, and he was wringing back the comb, and the water was flying from his hair and back of him toward the door. And this fella who the voices told him were going to assault him walked through the door at that exact same instant and got hit in the face with that water and actually did assault him. It was common for the voices to tell prisoners which houses to break into, when to break into them, and when the patient, when the occupants were up and when to leave. They told one guy even where to hide to evade the cops.
Wow.
So, you know, he broke into one house. They wouldn't tell him exactly where the loot was, but they tell him the general area. And then the voices told him, hey, you better get out, the guy's up. So he jumped out the window, and he started running down this one alley. And they said, no, don't go down that alley. The cops are coming up that alley. Go to the right and up that street and jump into the trash can. There was a big one of those metal trash containers that, you know, big enough for him to get into, square box. And they said, go in there, close the door, and you stay there. So he did. He closed the lid. And the cop walked right by with a flashlight. And as soon as the guy passed, he kind of pushed open the top a little bit, and he looked, and the guy was only like 10, 15 feet away, and the voices are saying, okay, now get out now. Get out now and run. And he said, they're right there. I can't go now. They're right there. And they said, go. You go now. So he got out, closed the top very quick, very silently, and he ran. But he left all the loot in the garbage can. When he got back to his apartment, the voices were congratulating him for a job well done. And he said, no, I didn't do such a good job. I left all the stuff in the garbage can. And they said, no problem. You go back there in the morning and go get it. You know? So that they knew where the cops were, where they were coming.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, it almost sounds like some people have a little sort of a relationship with these voices that it, you know, I don't know. Have you had anybody that liked the voices?
Oh yeah, I did. And I didn't work. Usually I don't waste my time with them, because they're not going to give up the voices. Now there are, you know, in the prison there are some very distinct advantages to having those voices on your side. These guys, when they get angry, they become supernaturally strong. I mean, they are just. There's one tale of now this was at the central unit, which is the big prison in Florence, Arizona. And this one psychotic, I mean, he was in a cell by himself, and he was like a big 180-pound solid muscle guy, and, you know, just crazy as a bedbug, hearing voices. And they wanted to move him into another cell. And the way the guards have, they have this macho mentality. You know, these guys are going to do what we want or else. So they go up to this guy's cell and they say, okay, we're moving you, cuff up. And he goes, I'm not doing anything. They said, stick your hands through the bars and cuff up. I go, no, screw you. I'm not doing anything. So they said, you know, we're going to have to go get the pepper spray. And what they had were these kind of like quart containers of pepper spray that would shoot like 10 feet. So they gave him another chance, and, you know, okay, cuff up, we're gonna spray you. So he went, screw you. And he grabbed the towel in his cell, and they just drenched him with that stuff. I mean, and that is awful stuff. Anybody who's ever had a taste of that, I mean, it burns. It feels like your skin is on fire. Your eyes are burning. I mean, it's horrible stuff. They unloaded like two canisters on this guy, and you know, when they were done, he threw off the soaked towel, and he's standing there like, come in and get me, you little fairies, you know. And they're like, you know, hey, okay, cuff up, or we're gonna go get the stun gun. So these guns that they had, they shot a dart with a wire attached, and that would go into the skin of the inmate, and then there would be a 50,000 volt discharge. And they had two of these guns. And by now, you know, there were other guards that were coming in because it was now turning into an altercation. But there was a lot more going on than that, because there were like three tiers to this cell block. And all the inmates in all those tiers were watching this show down there and watching this psychotic prisoner defy the guards. And of course, they were all cheering for the prisoner. And the guards couldn't let that happen. So here was this ego struggle there. So they go up to him with these two stun guns, and they say, okay, cuff up, or we're going to have to shock you. We're going to have to tase you. He goes, you know, you bunch of freaking fairies, come on in and get me, you bunch of homos. And he started insulting them. So, you know, they both fired. First one fired, and then he pulled the trigger, and the guy just stood there. The prisoner stood there, and he just shuddered. But he didn't go down. And a shock from one of those things would knock down the biggest prisoner. I mean, they would just knock him cold. And this guy just stood there and quivered. And after they gave him a second shot, the second guy shot his dart into this guy too. And they were just alternating one after the other. While one gun was recharging, the other guy was discharging. They did that 11 times. And by then, the warden was down there. He had heard of this, and he watched some of this, and then after the 11th time, he went, hey, you know, you guys better stop it. I'm going to get called up for cruel and unusual punishment. So, you know, the prisoner said, come in and get me, you bunch of fairies. You know, come on in here. None of them would dare do that. And they said, well, okay, you come out or we're going to get the dog. Now, the prisoners were terrified of these attack dogs. I mean, they were very expensive. They were very savage. And when they turned one loose on you, those things would just rip you to pieces. So they were more afraid of the dogs than they were those stun guns. So they brought in the dog handler, and they threatened the guy again. You go, come on out of there, or, you know, we're going to stick the dog on you. So the guy said, no, you come in, you bunch of little mimmy nincompoops. Come on in here and get me out. And so what they did is crack the door big enough for the dog to come in, and the dog lunged at him. He was sitting on the bed, and he threw his arm up in front of his face, and the dog bit him on the wrist and clamped down all the way to the bone. You know, blood was gushing out, and the dog would not let go. So he pulls the dog's face right up to his face, looks the dog in the eye, and he says, sit. And the dog sat. Whoa. And they're all sitting there going, holy cow, what just happened? But the dog wouldn't let go. He was still clamped onto the guy's wrist, but he wouldn't let go. And then the guy starts petting it. He starts petting its head while blood is gushing out of his arm with this dog clamped onto his forearm. And he goes, nice pup, nice pup. And the dog handler's going, what the hell is going on in there? So they start pulling the cord that the dog was attached to. And the dog had a grip on the guy's arm. They pulled him out of the cell, and then they all beat the crap out of him. So, yeah, they become supernaturally strong. I've seen little 100-pound paranoid schizophrenics throw two big guards around the inside of a cell like popcorn. So a lot of those guys, they didn't want to lose those voices in the prison. And a lot of the gangsters didn't want them to. So they would kind of, you know, get them to come into their gangs And then they would make them quit their medication, so the voices were strong. And then they would start telling them that this enemy gang member was trying to kill them and that they needed to knock him off first. So these guys were like torpedoes. You know, they'd sick the psychotic guy on their enemies, and the guy would go stab them or beat them up or do something. They didn't care. You know, they were out of it.
That's so, why I was afraid of the crazy guy in prison. You hear about this, you know, oh, the crazy guy.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of them that once the state hospitals dried up, you know, the cost of treating them in the state hospital was only a fraction of what it cost to send them to prison. But most of them, you know, they're crazy. They can't hold jobs. They can't function. So they commit crimes to feed themselves, and or they beg on the street. A lot of these beggars are schizophrenics that can't survive any other way. But once they commit a crime, they send them to prison, and the prison is now the new state hospital. They are packed with these guys, and the treatment there is awful. So you have these guys that are already in bad shape, and then you send them to prison for several years, and they come out a total nightmare. They are just cold and hard, calculating, you know, a lot of them killers. A lot of these guys that you see grabbing a gun and shooting all these people, those are the guys that are hearing voices telling them to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was one that I worked with. He wasn't violent. As a matter of fact, he was kind of a mousy guy. And you asked whether, you know, some of them want to keep them. Well, the gangsters for sure want to keep the voices because they're useful. But this guy wasn't a gangster, and he wanted to get rid of them. So we worked for like 6 months. He was a stockbroker. And he worked on Wall Street, and he made like a six-figure income and was well off. He was married, and he was the first guy that I've ever worked with who would tell me about what his voices were telling him. And he was married for like 20 years, the whole time hearing this voice who didn't like his wife. And I asked him, how did you hide that from her for 20 years? He said, well, I'd go out to the garage and I'd talk to the voices. And if she caught me, I told her I was talking to myself. So the voices were always telling him bad things about his wife. And one day she said, well, I'm leaving you. And he said, well, great, that was wonderful. He was happy about that. And when she saw that, she just gutted him. She took everything. She left him homeless. She took his car. She took his everything he owned. And he was in New York City. He was sleeping in the Central Park in some grovel somewhere. He would eat out of trash cans. And the voices would tell him where to be. He knew all the garbage cans for the restaurants who had the best food. And he and the voices preferred that.
Now, you said he was a stockbroker. Did they just come upon him one day? He started hearing voices, or?
Oh, no. After his wife threw him out, he was homeless. So he was hearing voices the whole time he was married.
But I mean, was that just someone who had naturally schizophrenia?
Well, I don't know if you can say any schizophrenia is natural, but he had it for years.
Okay.
And it was from using cocaine. He was using a massive amount of cocaine and drugs while he was working on Wall Street. And then they came on. So he showed up in one of my groups one time and got to talking to him about his voices, and he was willing to talk about them some. And he was the first inmate that would report to me what they were saying. And I found that very interesting. And we worked for like 6 months. And then one day, we were chipping away at them and experimenting with different ways to weaken them. Finally, we succeeded in getting rid of them. And he said that he was in my office the day they left. And he said they screamed and disappeared. And I was looking at him when this happened, and he looked stunned. He looked disoriented. And he tried to get up, and he couldn't stand up. And then he looked at me, sat back down, he looked at me, and he said, the silence is deafening. Because he'd never had silence in his head, you know, for decades. And I said, okay, they're gone. You know, now don't be looking for them back. You know, get onto a positive spiritual path and stay there. So I would check with him every once in a while. I'd give him, you know, positive stuff to read and try to guide him along and get him on a positive spiritual path. And I was about to be transferred to a different unit. And I checked on him before I left, and he was working for, motor vehicle. He was answering calls for motor vehicle in a call center that the prison had. And I caught him during break, and I said, "How you doing? The voice is still gone?" He goes, No, I called him back." I said, "Well, why'd you do that?" And he said, "Because I was lonely."
Wow. And he was able to call them back. They heard it.
He called them back. And that's not the first one that eventually called them back. That the guy where I was telling you flipped the water on the other inmate and got into a fight with him. When we got rid of his voices, he called them back, and just curious as to where they went, because they were silent for like 2 weeks, and he wasn't used to that. So he went, "Where are you? Who are you?" And they came back and they said, "We'll show you who we are." And they beat the crap out of him. They attacked him all that night so bad that in the morning he could not even get out of bed. And he showed up in my office and he looked like hell frozen over. And I said, "What happened to you?" And he said, "I called them back and this is what happened."
So there was some sort of physical manifestation of him, or was it just psychological torture?
Yeah, it was more like psychological torture. It was like the dark night of the soul. I mean, everybody's had one of those from time to time. It's like they would just attack, telling them everything bad, everything rotten. And some of them would have physical manifestations. I remember one guy coming in with four finger marks across his back. And he said they attacked me last night while I was trying to do some of these exercises to get rid of them. And he said, "You want to see?" And I said, "Okay, show me." And he lifted up his shirt, and here's four finger marks evenly spaced all the way down his back. Something had scratched him.
So there is some sort of connection to the physical realm.
Well, the ones that are very strong I've seen are able to do that to some degree, but it's not common. There's one where they were working on the person's eye. They were trying to take the eye out, and they kept pecking at the eye, and eventually the eye kind of went out of whack. You know, it kind of shot off to the side. So they can do stuff like that. They can make you sick. I had one female that came in one time, and she told me that she had never seen so many dark entities as she saw in the ER. The regular ER. So, the psychanic is attached to the ER. So they take the psych patients and they move them from the formal ER into the psych annex, where we have to decide what to do with them. And she said I saw more dark entities there than I've ever seen before.
Shadow people?
Well, they were shadows. Not all of them were people. But they were kind of like dark masses that she said had attached themselves to various patients there. And I remember her telling me the story of she was watching one patient where the doctor was diagnosing this patient, giving him a diagnosis. And the doctor was telling them what their diagnosis was. And she said she saw black toads come out of the doctor's mouth. And the thought went through her mind that if that patient believed what the doctor was telling them, they would get that sickness. And I found that very interesting.
Yeah, I'm picturing you're saying black toads coming out of the mouth. And if somebody believes them, the toad jumps into the other person.
Well, she didn't say anything about the toads jumping. Yeah, it was kind of like that diagnosis was the toads and was entering the patient, these black toads. Yeah. So, I found that very interesting. She said there were black masses that had attached themselves to a number of patients in the ER, and she was able to see them. Now, while she was telling me this, at the time I saw her, I had developed the ability to feel these things, and I could feel how strong they were. I couldn't see them. I couldn't hear them, but I could sure as devil feel them. And when she told me about, you know, the patients in the ER having these attachments to them, as soon as she finished that story, she started getting very agitated. And you know, I told her from the beginning when I brought her into the interview room, I said, I'm going to be asking you questions. If you can't maintain, you're free to leave. I won't obstruct you. You can leave at any time. And boy, when I started asking her after she told me that story, she goes, I can't hold. And she ran out of there, headed for the bathroom, and started pacing back and forth. And of course, that drew a lot of attention from, you know, the psych nurse and some of the other psych staff. And I just said, give her a minute. She'll be okay. And she came back, but I could feel when she was getting agitated. I could feel that. It was a very strong presence. And the way I experienced it was like a cold, icky electrical feeling. There's no other feeling like it. It's just associated with those things attacking. And usually when they're attacking me, they're usually also attacking the patient at the same time. And that one was so strong, you know, I felt that whatever field I had around me protecting me had knocked it down to maybe a billionth of an inch above my skin. And I was kind of wondering what would ever happen if that field ever broke.
Yeah. Now, it sounds like we have the people that experience the voices that only they hear in their head. Then you have these black masses that don't really speak, except you said that one individual described as a high-pitched, squeaky sound. So that sounds like two different, possible. I don't know if it's two different entities.
I think they are. You know, because the voices will speak.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what those shadow people were, but the psychotic patients would usually always see them. And they would be standing over their bed at night, peering down at them. Or they would walk into their bedroom, and they would be darker than the rest of the room. And like you said, they wear hats. Some of them saw capes. Some of them saw monsters. They never, as far as I knew, no one ever reported that they had physically hurt them.
Yeah, so, I've never heard of anybody being quote unquote physically hurt. I've shared that we shared it offline, but I've shared it with my listeners as well about you know, having my own experience with a shadow creature in childhood that would push me out of my body and pull me back in. And as I recall, it was almost a ticklish feeling. When you notice this thing, it comes at you. And for me, when I was a child, thought it was either trying to teach me something or it was playing with me. But maybe it was malevolent. Maybe it was trying to possess me and push me out of the way so it could take over my body. I mean, I don't know. I've shared with you and my audience about later on having experience with a Greek book. And the shadow with two red eyes scaring the bejeebas out of me more than I've ever been. So I can personally attest that there is something out there. Now, I believe that these shadow creatures are what I call djinn. And I think if I were to take a guess at what those voices are, I would have to say that they're probably demonic. And we're looking at demons and djinn both trying to feed off of energy and or possession and attachment.
Yeah, you're breaking up. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you. They would fit the description of demonic, but they come across as the person's thoughts, and they want that person to believe that those are their thoughts. Okay. Nobody asks where thoughts come from, you know, or what they are. And I remember when I was in the doctoral program, I was in my second year of this PhD psychology program that was supposedly the best in the nation. And the professor, the head of the department, was up there lecturing us on how to cheat with statistics and not get caught. And I was just like, what? you know, what? And I looked around at the other students, and Tom, the only other guy there, he looked at me and like shook his head, and then both of us looked forward real quick so the professor didn't catch us doing that. But the rest of them were just, oh, that's how it's done. And I'm like, I can't believe this. You know, at the end of that lecture, he said, is there anybody who has any questions over anything? And, you know, by then I had 4 years undergraduate psych and 4 years of graduate. And nobody had mentioned anything about thoughts or where they came from or anything about them. You know, so I raised my hands and I asked him, I said, where do thoughts come from? And he stood there and he stared at me like I had just fallen out of a spaceship at his feet. You know, and it's like I could see him like nobody asked those questions. And he didn't know what to say. And I could tell he was embarrassed. And that's the worst thing you could do to one of those PhD professors is embarrass them. Their egos are so immense for the most part. You know, that's a red check on your name. And he said, well, I'll talk to you after the lecture. So I went, oh, okay. So after the lecture, I went to approach him, and he just walked out of the room, disappeared. Yeah. So they don't have that answer. But 700 years ago, there was a Christian mystic by the name of Emanuel Swedenborg, who was one of the chief scientists of his day. He was the chief mining engineer for the Queen of Sweden. And he knew about everything there was to know about science in those days. He traveled all over Europe studying science. He met with all these Immanuel Kant and all these important people. And at the age of 55, he saw that science wasn't taking him where he wanted to go. He wanted to know what was behind physical reality, what was behind thought and thinking. And he dropped all his scientific endeavors at that point and just went into spiritual quests. And he was given access to heaven and hell. And he would come back and he would write about those things. And one of his most famous books is Heaven and Hell. And in those books, he was describing what he called evil spirits that precisely matched these voices. Now, back in the day when I was in the prison and in the state hospital, I didn't know anything about Emanuel Swedenborg. But I did read a book called The Presence of Other Worlds by a clinical psychologist who worked in the state hospital and did study the voices. And he would talk to them. And I'd forgotten all about that book. I'd read it years ago. And they matched exactly what the voices his patients were saying. And when I first started working with patients and the voices, I didn't have this knowledge. I didn't know. But things got thicker and thicker and thicker. And when patients started to recover, I would be attacked late at night, 3 a.m. I would be crushed down into my bed, and I couldn't talk to anybody about this. You know, they'd think I was nuts.
So something would physically push you in your bed?
Something was physically crushing me into the bed. And then there was one time there was this loud explosion in the room that just jarred me, and I jumped up out of bed. My wife slept completely through it, but my son heard it. So I went, well, that's interesting. But I'm way ahead now of, you know, kind of how I came to this stuff. But the one story I wanted to tell you, you were asking about whether they knew stuff that the person couldn't know. But there was the one, this is kind of like the signature story. This fella, was arrested for drugs and possession of weapons. And he had a long history of arrests and trouble with the law. And he wanted to get rid of his voices. And he was the one where, you know, they asked, he asked them where they were, and they beat the crap out of him. But after he'd recovered the first time. But when I started working with him, he told me this story about when he was using drugs in San Diego, and the voices came and said, listen, we know where there's a Sesamelia pot field, in Oregon. You know, you got $250. Take it, fill your tank with gas, and drive up there, and we'll show you where it is. So listening to the voices, he followed them step by step, made every turn they told him to, ended up in Oregon at the base of this mountain on a dirt road where the road ended. And they told him to bring two sacks, burlap sacks with him. So he had those with him. And when he ran out of road, he said, okay, what do I do now? They said, okay, there's a hiking trail to your left. Take that up about, you know, 2-3 miles and just follow it. So he took his burlap sacks, went up there, and he came across this gigantic sesamilia pot field. And he started cutting down the marijuana, filled up those two burlap sacks, carried him back down the mountain, put him in his car, and he asked the voices, well, what do I do now? And he said, well, there's a park near here where we know you can sell that stuff without getting into too much trouble. So they led him to the park, and he made a fortune selling, you know, sesamilia marijuana. And with the money, he bought all the prostitutes he could handle. He bought all the alcohol and drugs he could drink. And what was strange is that he was a fisherman, and so were the voices. And when he's telling me this story, he said the voices wanted to go out on the Columbia River, and they wanted to fish.
Wanted to fish, yeah.
And I'm like, what? They wanted to fish? The voices wanted to fish? Yes, he goes, yeah, they wanted to fish.
Wow.
So he said he went out there, and they would tell him where to throw his hook, how long to leave it there, and when to move on. And he said he was the only one on the river catching any fish. So he did this for 2 weeks. You know, all the prostitutes he could handle, all the drugs. I mean, he was having the life of Riley. As far as, you know, it wasn't good for him. I mean, he was sinking deeper and deeper and deeper, both into addiction and into psychosis, but he was having a good time doing it, I guess.
Yeah.
And then he ran out of pot to sell and money. So he said, oh, okay, I'm going back up there. You know, this is after maybe a second or third time he'd been up there. And they said, no, don't go up there. They're waiting for you. If you go up there this time, they're going to kill you.
Yeah. Wow.
So they said, take your take whatever money you got and drive back to San Diego and don't go up there ever again.
Wow. At least they saved him. They saved his butt.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
We're at the top of the hour.
Holy cow.
It's going flying by. So we got one more hour. We're going to take about a 5-6 minute break, 5 or 6 minutes, and we will be right back with Jerry Marzinski. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Reported today that their population is evolving rapidly and advancing into a fifth dimensional consciousness. They are seeking peace with all cosmic cultures, which may mean that the Earth will be asked to join the prestigious Galactic Federation of Light Alliances. Please join Debbie West and Michael Hathaway on Lost Knowledge, Saturdays, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in Studio A, for the latest breaking news on the Star Visitor's peaceful contact and the ongoing project of cleansing the Earth.
Who are you?
I am the Architect. I created the Matrix. I've been waiting for you.
Why am I here?
You are the eventuality of an anomaly which, despite my sincerest efforts, I have been unable to eliminate from what is otherwise a harmony of mathematical precision, which has led you inexorably here.
You haven't answered my question.
The Matrix is older than you know, as you are undoubtedly gathering. The anomaly is systemic, creating fluctuations in even the most simplistic equation.
Choice. The problem is choice.
Right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Be here Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time for Private Eye Matrix Revealed with Monique Lassonde.
This is Jim Fetzer inviting you to join me on The Raw Deal, Revolution Radio, Studio B, Tuesday and Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 to 5 p.m. Central, 1 to 3 p.m. Pacific, JFK, 9/11, Wellstone, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Charlottesville, Las Vegas, the latest on politics and foreign affairs from an unconventional point of view. Come join Revolution Radio Tuesday, Thursday, Studio B.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
For tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we are listener-sponsored and commercial-free, but there still are bills to pay. In order to raise some needed funds to cover the cost, our station is offering a silver special. In the continental United States for a $60 donation, or in Alaska, Hawaii, or Canada for a $70 donation, we will send you an uncirculated 2018 one-ounce pure silver eagle. The $70 donation, the extra 10 is to cover shipping, by the way, outside of the continental United States. When making the donation, you must put Silver Eagle promo in the notes on the donation. And thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at revolution.radio and freedomslips.com. Without you, there is no us. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Back. Schedule will be on Revolution Radio every Saturday night, 6 to 8 p.m. You get outer space. You get honest answers, real researchers, truthful answers, and a place to engage with questions. Take part in the discussion. Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com hosts Collision Course every Saturday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Mountain Time, and 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And we are back. It is the second day of May. It is about 6 p.m. on the West Coast. And that would make it about 9 p.m. on the East Coast. And that would be 3 a.m. in Central Europe. Say hello to everybody again in the chat room. Hey, Batsman, Gino, Greenheart1, Mast139. We are talking to Jerry Marzinski. And we have one more hour. We've been talking about what are these voices in the head that some people start hearing. Well, some of the catalysts could be drug use. I've shared with Mr. Marzinski a story offline before we spoke about, and I've shared it online as well, about someone that I knew that was into methamphetamine, and they smoked, and they didn't know me very well. I didn't know them very well, but after apparently they had been, they were a chronic meth user, and I knew them shortly. I didn't know this until shortly after I met them. And then they said that they heard voices in their head, and those voices were telling them things about me and my family, which these things, they know things. They told these individuals where to go find treasure in people's houses, where to find the marijuana field. So I think there was, I don't think you shared it on air with me, but you talked about an experiment that a couple people did while shooting meth to determine if these shadow, if these shadows were real. And they were able to determine, they went to a field and on an Indian reservation and were able to find out that yes, indeed, they did see the same creatures doing the same things, and they wound up in the back of their pickup truck and actually physically manifesting to the point where they made the truck actually weigh down. I'm wondering if the combined energy of all these creatures was able to manipulate something in the physical realm. Like you stated, that some of the strong ones have that ability, and we've touched on that there may be more than one type of spiritual entity or entity that we're talking about here. We may be talking about these shadow creatures might be different from the voices that people actually hear in their heads. But I want to give the floor back to Jerry Marzinski for any continuation. This is fascinating information, and so you have the floor, sir.
Okay. Yeah, I do not think the shadow people are the same thing as the voices. I don't know exactly what they are or what they're doing. I know the Native Americans used to call them the Watchers. But, you know, they never, as far as I knew, they never physically harmed anybody. They would scare them half to death. I've had patients say they could feel them walk through them. They would be standing over them at night when they woke up at 2 or 3 in the morning staring down at them. But I've never had any of them report that they physically harmed them. The voices are a different story, though. But, what I'd like to do is cover some aspects that psychologists and psychiatrists are going to be loath to look at. Now, I can see them down there now going, yeah, this guy's a wacko. What I'd like to do is give them enough information to where if they will open their eyes and drop their egos, they can see some of the same stuff I did with regard to the voices. They are consistently negative. They consistently tell the patient bad things about themselves or others. So after all the experiences I had studying the voices, here's psychiatrists insisting that they're hallucinations, and I'm knowing damn well that they are not. They are the driving force behind paranoid schizophrenia. They are the ones that tell these guys to do all this bizarre, dangerous, suicidal stuff. But to psychiatrists, they're just meaningless hallucinations. So let's take a quick look at how psychiatrists and schizophrenics get along. One thing I noticed at the state hospital was that psychiatrists were assaulted by these patients at a rate much higher than any other doctor or any other mental health staff, including psych nurses, psychologists, counselors, regular medical doctors. The schizophrenics just did not like psychiatrists, and I could not figure out why. They were attacked at an incredible level. So what I did is looked up some information on that, and I found a study of 120,000 assaults from 1987 to 1992 over a five-year period. The assault rate for all jobs was 12.6 per 1,000. The assault rate for doctors other than psychiatrists was 16.2 per 1,000. The assault rate for custody staff who are around these people all the time, 24 hours, is 69 per 1,000. And the assault rate for psychiatrists was 65 per 1,000. So the psychiatrists, even though they were spending so little time with these patients, I mean, in the state hospital, they'd spend 15 minutes at the most. How are you doing? You hearing voices? If so, I'll give you more meds, and boop, scoot them out. I mean, they had caseloads of 300-400. And in that brief amount of time, they were being attacked at the same rate that custody staff who are around that patient 24 hours a day are being attacked. That struck me as very, very strange. You know, going, well, what is going on here? I couldn't figure it out for years. I finally did, but it was years down the line. So what these psychiatrists were telling me when I first got to the state hospital, I'd start asking, what causes schizophrenia? Why are these guys doing these bizarre things? Why are they acting this way? What is the cause of this? You know, 95% of them said, it's a chemical imbalance in their brain. And that was it. But I was watching what they were doing. You know, they never gave any lab tests to figure out what chemicals were not balanced in the patient's brain. They were using a number of different drugs of different chemical compositions without any tests at all. So I'd ask them, well, how do you know what's out of balance if you don't have any tests?
The drug companies tell us,
and I'm like, these are all different chemicals that you're using. I mean, how do you know what they're balancing? How do you know when they're balanced? How do you know what the new balance is? How do you know what's going on? They don't have any tests. It was all, kind of shotgun. They were shooting in the dark with a shotgun. They would use one medication after another, and if one didn't work, they'd try another. Just until one kind of worked, and then I found out no such tests exist. None. They have no labs. They have no written tests. They have no nothing that will definitively show that this patient has schizophrenia. They have the personality test, but there is no lab test. There is no physical test that will definitively detect schizophrenia. It does not exist. So these guys are just kind of shooting in the dark with these meds, and they don't even know why they worked. For the first 10 years, they had no idea why they worked. These major tranquilizers were discovered in Europe, in France, in a lab that made dyes. And they found out that the patient or the people working in those labs would get groggy and sedate. And the chemical company, some jumped on it, and they wouldn't test it in Europe, so they brought it over to the U.S., and they were testing these major tranquilizers on patients here in the U.S. And it helped. They were able to control massive populations that otherwise were uncontrollable. They didn't cure anything. But this chemical imbalance, they're still saying there is a chemical imbalance. And they have no proof whatsoever. All they have is a correspondence, correlation. No proof.
It's a none. It's a big fraud with a huge consensus of people all agreeing upon the fraud and say
right.
We're all collectively lie and just assume.
Exactly. Just like they assumed that the voices are hallucinations without looking into them. You know, and they condemned anybody who did. I mean, I got in trouble twice when a psychiatrist found I was asking about these. So, you know, they're condemning anybody who investigates these things, and that's the height of ignorance. You know, condemnation without investigation, it's just at the peak of ignorance. And they have no investigation into the voices. None. Zero. They haven't done any studies at all. They just, out of their infinite arrogance, go, oh, these are hallucinations because everybody else isn't hearing them and we're not hearing them. So something's wrong with these people. You know?
I want to quote you on that. Condemnation without investigation is the
height of arrogance. Albert Einstein said that.
Okay, that's a good one, and it's absolutely true. And it seems to be the flavor of the day. This for what's happening in social media and everywhere else. Everybody's censoring and banning anybody because of whatever they deem is something that shouldn't be or should be condemned, and not allowing anybody to investigate of any subject.
Yeah, and that's the dark forces. Those are the same. What we're talking about here is a normal scale. So we're part of that. We all have psychotic thoughts that psychotics have. You know, the psychotics have lost control of them. So what these voices do is they enter and they try to convince the person that that thought is theirs. It belongs to them. It's a disgusting, horrible thought, and they are disgusting, horrible people. And they will do anything they can to make the person believe that those negative, nasty thoughts about themselves and everybody else are their thoughts. And then they'll try to make them act on it.
So for some people, then, it's a stealthy thing where they're creating these thoughts, and they don't want the person to really know. They're not coming out as voices. They're more or less just projecting thoughts that they hope the person's going to be mixed in with their own thoughts, and that person will just be shaped by these manipulative thoughts. Whereas other folks, it's outright, hey, let's go over here and get this and do that and don't do this, and I'm right here with you, buddy, kind of a voice with you. And then for others, it's like, what's that thing peeking over there behind the tree?
The more they fall for it, the deeper mm-hmm. they get and the more control these voices get. They want as much control as they can possibly get. And I didn't know, I knew that they were always negative. I know that any thought that comes into your head that's negative about yourself or somebody else, they put there. And then I found out that they have access to the patient's entire memory. They have access to our entire memory, all of us. And what they do is they go in there and they pick up all these deep, dark stuff that's buried alive and hasn't been worked through. Stuff that we're embarrassed about, stuff that we're humiliated about, unhealed wounds, unhealed traumas. They can bring that up and they can rub it in your face and insert these thoughts in your mind. And it's like they're fishing. They bait the hook with some of that crap, the unfinished business, and they throw it in front of you with a thought. And if you react to it, then it generates negative emotional energy and upsets the person, and it upsets the patient. So for years, I thought that I noticed that there was a lack of energy every time one of my patients was attacked by these voices. They would be drained. They had no energy. They were just like dish rags. They were just drained. And I thought for years that this was because of the intensity, that they wouldn't let them sleep. These things do to these patients exactly what the Army does to prisoners of war. They constantly keep them awake. They batter them. They don't let them eat right. They isolate them. I mean, it's the same thing, and they just keep at them till they wear them down and act on what the voices are trying to tell them. And yeah, I'm like, okay, it must be the anxiety that does that. So I just assumed that it was the constant anxiety of listening to these things tell you terrible things about yourself and everybody else, and you know, putting hallucinations in your mind. And I mean, it's hell. But then I got I was working. I always got put on the nastiest units in the prison, and I was working for the jail. It was the jail for the entire prison, so the worst of the worst went there. And one day I got a call from the captain of that unit, and he wanted me to come over and speak with an inmate who was floridly psychotic, and he was standing over his cellmate. They were two guys locked in the same cell. And the psychotic guy was at 3-4 in the morning. He's standing there in the dark, in the pitch blackness, staring down at his cellmate who's trying to sleep in the bottom bunk. And his cellmate knew this guy was psychotic, and it was freaking him out. Now, the sane guy, he was put in there because he had snitched off the gangsters as to a drug deal. And security confiscated a ton of drugs and broke up the gang and sent them to different prisons. So they wanted that guy dead. They wanted him dead so bad that some of them got in trouble on purpose so they could be sent to CIU to try to get this guy. You know, he'd already been stabbed once or twice, and he was in there for protective custody, and they couldn't let him out without a guard being around him all the time because these other guys wanted him dead so bad. So you could not be under more stress than that guy, living in the cell with a psychotic inmate who did who knows what to get there, who's unmedicated, and standing over you at 3 in the morning staring down at you. You know, when you wake up and you look at this guy in the dark standing there, and he's acting freaky the whole time, and you're locked in that cell with him, not knowing what he did to get there. You know? And I pulled them one after the other up the stairs, and I watched them as they climbed the stairs. I talked to the guy who the gangsters wanted dead first, and he just virtually ran up those stairs. And throughout that interview, he had tons of energy. I mean, he was talking and he was animated and you know, like, they're trying to kill me and I got to get out of here. You got to help me get to another unit. And, you know, I told him, well, okay, I'll do what I can, but I don't control movement. And after I was finished with him, I had them pull the psychotic inmate out of the cell, and he could barely make it up those steps. He had no energy whatsoever. And during the conversation, he could barely speak. He was so drug out because of the attacks of the voices. And after I finished that interview, I went, it's not anxiety. I mean, that's not what drains these guys. And I'm like, if it's not anxiety, then what is it? And I was reading a book by Miguel Ruiz, who's a South American shaman. And it was talking about these things that were energy parasites and were draining people. So what I did is I brought that book into the prison with a guy that I was working with for like 6 months, and he was slowly getting rid of the voices. He was doing good. I could trust him. He would tell me everything the voices would tell him in real time. And I said, hey Mike, I want you to tell me what you think of this paragraph. So I read him that paragraph about the entities draining the people that they were attached to. And his eyes just glazed over, and he sat there rigid, and he looked like a friggin' zombie. And he was just staring at me with this strange look on his face. And I looked at him, and I'm like, uh-oh, he's going to attack. So I pushed my chair back against the wall in case he came at me, because in the medical unit, they just had female guards all the time, and they were, you know, if you're going to be attacked by one of these guys, they're virtually worthless. So you're on your own for the first 10 minutes or so. So I pushed the chair back against the wall so if he came at me, I could kick him back. And he's just sitting there staring at me, and then all of a sudden this crackle, it was like an arc welder, appeared right behind my head. Just this loud crack, 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 crack. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And I turn around, and it starts moving to the left and hits the left hand or the right-hand wall, and moves to my right, goes on the right-hand wall, and a 45-degree angle starts climbing up that wall, crackling. And I'm switching my attention back and forth between this inmate, who I'm like, I'm not sure whether he's going to attack, and trying to see what is causing this crackling noise. And there was nothing there. There was no smell. I couldn't feel anything. You know, all I could do was hear it. And it was sounded just like an arc welder. Crack, 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 all the way up the wall. And I didn't want to take my eye off that prisoner too long. So I'm like switching my attention back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then it starts cutting across the ceiling over his head. And then I could keep watch of it and him too, and I still don't see anything. And then it finishes, goes across the room, and then starts coming down the left-hand wall at a 45-degree angle right toward me. And I'm totally freaked out. I can't see anything. I can't feel anything. This guy's standing there, just sitting there staring at me like a zombie with this strange look on his face, rigid. And the thing comes down, and it goes into this Rubbermaid trash can right at my left leg, and it's crackling in there. And I look down, and there's nothing in there. The inmate porter had cleaned the thing, and it was empty. And I look back and forth at him, and then it stops. And I'm like, you know, like, what the hell just happened? And I'm stunned. And I look at him, and he gets up very slowly, and he goes, I gotta go. And I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking, go, get the hell out of here, go, now leave, you know. So he shuffles down the hall, and I'm sitting there stunned. I'm absolutely stunned. I mean, I heard this. There's nobody I could talk to about it, you know. And yeah. I see no marks on the wall. You know, I see nothing that could have caused that. After he leaves medical building, I go to all the other offices down the hall and try to open. They're all locked. There's nothing that could have caused that. And then I sit down and I'm stunned. I mean, I just canceled my appointments for the rest of the afternoon. Now, what I did know by then is that if you say something that upsets the voices, it's something they don't like and it's something they find harmful or they don't want you to know. But at that point, I was too stunned to even think about that. I figured that out later. They didn't want me to know that they were taking that energy. That's the last thing they wanted their victims to know, and I had found it. So
it sounds like that what you described, I don't know, my gut instinct tells me that something may have been probing your auric defenses in a way, you know, your spiritual shield. Something was trying to look for a hole in your aura, a weakened chakra, you know, some way.
I don't know whether I could feel these things by then. I mean, my ability to feel their presence came on gradually, almost unnoticeably. And I didn't feel being attacked then. I didn't feel that electrical icky feeling. I was just stunned. I mean, what had just happened made no sense. You know, and I didn't think, you know, I told you about the, you know, the shadow people that hit the back of that truck and it went up when they went there. But I thought these things, whatever they were, whatever the voices were stuck in the prisoner's head or in the victim's head and could not come out. I thought they're in there. They can't come out. They can't hurt me. They can try to convince the guy to hurt me, but they can't hurt me themselves. But when I experienced this, like 30 seconds of crackling, I mean, it went on for a long time. It was beyond anything that I could possibly deny. I couldn't deny it. I realized that they could affect physical reality, and they had just done so. And I'm thinking, if they can do that, what else can they do, and where am I going? And I don't have any cognitive map, and this is all unexplored area, and I don't know, I don't have any map. I don't know what I'm facing. And I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. And I didn't call that guy back for probably close to a month. And then my curiosity got the best of me. And he was doing pretty well while I was working with him. And I was assuming that when he showed up in my office again, that he would be a mess. You know? But he wasn't. He was in pretty good shape. He said, I've been doing some of the stuff you told me. I'm weakening the voices. He had good energy level. And I'm like, that didn't make sense either. So when I brought him in, I said, hey, do you remember the last time you were in here when did you hear that crackling noise? And he said, yeah, I did, but I was surprised you did. So he was surprised I heard it. And I said, what the hell was that? And he said, that was them. And I said, them who? The voices? And he said, yeah, that was the voices. And I said, what were they doing? He said, they were trying to scare you off. Huh. And I said, well, God, they did a damn good job of it. And I asked him, I said, what were they telling you as you left my office that day? He said, they were telling me to go get a shank and stick it in your belly. That's a homemade prison knife.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh, okay, well, they've told patients to attack me before, and I didn't think much of it. And I said, well, why didn't you do it? And he said, I couldn't find one.
Joe.
I went, oh, my God. What am I getting myself into here? So I knew the voices weren't hallucinations. These things were entities, and they were draining the person. And you can look at depressed people. You look at how they think. Those negative thoughts are these things draining them. They have complete access to your mind. They can pull up all the garbage that you've ever done that you don't want people to know about, stuff you feel guilty about. And they like fish. It's like they'll bait a hook and make a thought materialize in your mind and see if you'll bite at it, see if they can get a reaction from it.
Now, how often is this, do people start hearing voices due to drug use versus, let's say, just hearing voices out of the blue? Have that use come up?
The one that I found that was the most dangerous and the most frequent was amphetamine. I've saw more prisoners go insane on amphetamine than any other drug. And it would start off gradually. They'd get high on the amphetamine, they'd be speeding, they'd see the shadow people, and then they'd start hearing voices that they knew weren't them, and they'd go, oh yeah, I'm just hallucinating. And, they'd blow it off, and when they came down, the voices went away. So that would happen time after time after time, each time the voices staying a little longer, and then one day they didn't go away when they came down, and they were now psychotic. They were now considered schizophrenic, and they're insane now. And the prisoners called amphetamine the devil's drug.
Well, I do believe that there are substances that can basically alter your consciousness, like tuning a radio. Shaman use certain chemicals, ayahuasca. Some people utilize magic mushrooms or LSD. Who's to say that using amphetamine doesn't also have a effect on your brain that causes your senses to be able to tune into something that isn't quite the best thing in the world for us to be tuning into?
Amphetamine is the worst. Now, I've used some magic mushrooms back in the day. I've used some LSD, light doses of LSD back in the day. None of them did anything like this.
Right.
I mean, amphetamine is the most dangerous drug out there. Now, other ones will also do this. The prisoner I told you about who was using cocaine, he went. Now, one thing that was interesting is that the voices didn't like the patients using marijuana. And I found that surprising.
Yeah, that's interesting. They don't like
it. They didn't like it because it calms them down and there's no negative withdrawal effect. What they want is that withdrawal effect. They want to create misery and torment. And the negative emotional energy that's generated, they take that. So schizophrenics who are attacked by voices, they get crazy for a while, and then after the voices leave, they're drained. And I watched this happen for years, but I didn't know what was happening until I had that incident at the prison jail, in the prison, where I watched these two inmates. Then I knew that something was happening, and it wasn't anxiety. Now, if you try to ask one of them where their energy went, they can't see it. They can't see the correlation. If you point it out, say, well, you know, you can point it out and say, well, can't you see that every time the voices hit you, every time they attack, that you're drained of energy? They can see that if you point it out. But if you ask them, well, then where does your energy go? They'll go, I don't know. And then you say, okay, if you stuck your hand in a fire, you've heard these voices, you know, thousands of times, and every time that you've heard them, you were drained when they left. Okay? Now, if you stuck your hand in a fire and every time you got burned, what would be burning you? They had no trouble saying the fire. But if you say, okay, if every time the voices come, you're drained, you have no energy, then where do you think your energy went? I don't know.
Huh.
I don't know. 95% of them would say, I don't know. They were being blocked from that realization. These things did not want them to know that they were draining their energy. And this is happening to all of us all the time at different levels. You know, those thoughts that come into your head that are awful, negative, those are inserted by these things. Somebody says something off key to you or off color, they're waiting right there to pour gasoline on the fire and say, yeah, that guy's an asshole. You give him a taste of his own medicine. They're wanting to stoke that. They're wanting to generate that negative emotional energy, that fear, that anger, that anxiety. And you look at it on a global scale, and you see it's happening on a global scale. You look at the deep state. Those guys are eating up with these things. You look at Macron, you look at all these guys, the bankers, and you know, they're eating up with these. They don't care about anybody but themselves.
Have you ever heard of a term called the Archons?
Yes, that's what they are.
Okay.
That's another name for them.
Yeah. We have some people also in the chat room that are in total agreement with that. It's interesting. I've talked to a few exorcist priests. And I was asking one, I said, you know, how busy are you? And he says, oh, we get multiple calls a week. We're busy all the time. You know, and I said, really, there's that many people that need exorcisms? And I asked him, I said, how do you determine, you know, if this – now, I said, how do you determine if this person isn't just mentally ill? And he says, well, we have, you know, a psychologist and some people that come with us.
Good. Well, yeah, good. Much help they would be.
Well, interestingly enough, he says most of the time we find that it's an entity. I had one Catholic priest exorcist trained in the Vatican on exorcism tell me that it's either sometimes they'll find what's called a demon tribe or an extraterrestrial is what he called it. He said sometimes it's not a demon, sometimes it's an extraterrestrial, which could be. I'm thinking maybe these shadow creatures, these voices, there are multiple types of spirits or entities out there that are feeding on our energy, and they have slightly different tactics on how they do it. So I have a question from the chat room, and basically it's have you ever heard of anybody experiencing something similar to like the Predator after doing magic mushrooms or hallucinogens? And just a further question to that, have you heard of other entities other than the voices or the shadows?
There was a period of time where I would actually hold conversations with these things. And then I got a strong feeling, like an intuitive feeling, that I shouldn't be doing that. So well, I stopped. But during that period of time, there were some of these voices who weren't, you know, they were just like lost spirits. There was one guy where I was talking to his voice, and he was driving a motorcycle on the expressway and got hit and was killed suddenly. And he came up out of his body, And he was wondering what was going on, and he saw another motorcycle guy driving down the road, and he went into him. And that was the guy I was talking to.
Whoa.
So, you know, he wasn't trying to cause any major damage. He wasn't trying to destroy the person, but he was causing a lot of trouble because that guy now had two personalities in him that were conflicting.
Now, that's fascinating. Yes.
Now, there was another one where this prisoner said that he was washing his car or something, and apparently it was a gang hit, and he heard two pops. And the next thing he knows is he was lying on the ground, and he was looking down at his body. So he had been that guy had been shot, and that voice went into one of the prisoners.
And now
I was conscious, and it was with him now.
Wow, that kind of puts a whole new twist on things. Like it seems a traumatic death could possibly facilitate. Like you said, maybe what I guess a lost spirit.
I've run into them where they're lost souls, but the voices to schizophrenics here, it's almost like they're assigned to them. And I've spoken to some where they weren't doing a good enough job destroying the person, so they were removed and other voices were put in there.
Oh.
Yeah. That was strange.
You're fired.
Fired. You know, you're not doing a good enough job at making this person miserable. And there's rankings of them. So there's like, you know, it's like the army. They have overseers, and if they're caught, they're punished. So, you know, the ones that talk to me, they were punished. And so they're not supposed to get caught. You know,
that's interesting.
They want people to think that these. Just like psychiatry is saying, that these things are hallucinations, that they're not real, that these guys aren't connected to anything, that they're not entities, they're just mere hallucinations. Yeah.
Have you ever heard of something called the screw tape letters?
Yes, I have. That's right on. That is right on. That's a bullseye.
Yeah, if anybody hasn't heard of the screw tape letters, I did a show on that way back, but look that one up. It's basically about a demon, you know, that and like you said, they have rankings and they have to try to make the humans that they're assigned to do certain things, and if they don't, you know, if they aren't up to par, they're going to get punished.
Well, that's exactly what happens. You know, that I've been told that by them themselves. Now, another interesting fact that I haven't mentioned here. So you got a schizophrenics. Suicide rate is about five times that of the normal population. And I think you'd agree they were a fairly unstable population. And would you think that another population, that if they had that same suicide rate, they would also be unstable? What do you think?
If there was another population with the same rate?
With about that same suicide rate, would you think they were also unstable?
I would think so.
Yeah. Well, according to the Journal of American Medical Association, the suicide rate for psychiatrists is 65 per 100,000, or 5.9 times that higher of the general population.
And I'm wondering if these things are bouncing between the patients and the doctors.
I think they are. So that's roughly equivalent to the suicide rate of their schizophrenic patients, just slightly less. I found that very interesting.
Yeah, that's fascinating, actually.
So what happens is when these guys start hearing voices, what they determine those voices are makes a huge difference as to whether they're going to recover on their own, and some of them do. So they break into three different segments. One-third of the patients will say, well, they're demons, they're not me, they're something else, they're not me. They know it, they can feel it. Another third says, I'm not sure, I don't know what they are. You know, I just don't know. The worst off are those that believe what psychiatry tells them, that they're hearing voices, those voices are hallucinations, they're not real. that their brain is broken and it is attacking themselves. The ones who believe that they are something other than themselves are not attacking themselves. They have determined that whatever is attacking them isn't them. So they have an enemy that they can start watching and trying to fight. Where if they believe what psychiatry says, that it is them, their brain is broken, it's due to this chemical brain imbalance that has long been proven wrong, that the drug companies that are making $3.6 billion a year selling these antipsychotic drugs are still pushing in their advertisements. Those are the guys that are the very worst off.
Yeah, and you could imagine why. I mean, if you're told that you're broken, you're never going to get better, you're going to have these awful drugs, and you're worthless, you're you know, insufficient and inferior, and it's you, there's no hope, that's going to bring you down. But if, right. like I said, if you realize, wait a minute, it's not me, I'm being tormented by something else, I'm going to fight this thing, then you know, it's like, hey, I am a human, I am me, I am worth something. So I could see that. I could see why, if you buy into this, you have a chemical imbalance and you're insufficient, then you're going to be like, well, why am I even living? You know,
You know, and then they try to tell the psychiatrist about the voices, and they go, they're hallucinations, they're not real. And if they persist, they drug them even more. And these drugs that they're using are horrible. You know, they cure nothing. They cause all kinds of nasty side effects, swelling.
They cause the chemical imbalance.
Well, they do. I mean, they're and what the voices do is one thing I noticed while working at the state hospital was that we were trying to get these guys stabilized and out of there with a job. And they would constantly go off their medications. And that made no sense to me. It's like, that's the only thing we had back then that would stabilize these guys. So their choice was, okay, either put up with these nasty side effects or go insane, which is hell. I mean, it's just, it's many times worse. It's a difference between having a forced choice between getting the flu, or choosing the bubonic plague. And they would consistently choose the plague. They would consistently choose to go psychotic, go off their medications, and go back to being crazy again. And I'd ask them, I said, well, why do you do that? Do you like being crazy? Oh, no, I hate being crazy. Then why do you do that? And it made no sense to me. And what they would say all the time, consistently, and this is what the staff believe too, as well, I don't like the side effects of the meds. Okay, fine. But then when you compare the side effect, what I did at one point is I gave them this blank sheet of paper and said, okay, write down all the side effects of these antipsychotic meds you're taking. All right, when you're done, give that to me. And so when I got that, I gave them another one with all the symptoms of paranoid schizophrenia. Nightmares, hallucinations, auditory, not sleeping, not eating, 2 pages of these nasty, ugly, rotten symptoms. And I said, okay, check each one of those that you've experienced while you were off meds. And they check a bunch of them. And then I'd give them the 2 sheets back, and I said, which one is worst? And they had no problem saying, well, you know, being psychotic is worst. You know, I said, well, why do you go off your medications? Why do you jump from the frying pan right into the fire? And they go, I don't know. Hundreds of them said that for years. And I kept asking the same question over and over and over again. Like, you know, they say somebody who's crazy asks the same question over and over and over again and expects a different answer. And I just kept doing that for like years until one day one girl said, the voices told me that the medicines were poison and that the side effects were the effect of that poison and that the psychiatrist was poisoning me. And I went, wow, that explains why these guys are attacking these psychiatrists at such a high rate. Because that wasn't the first time I heard that they believed psychiatry was poisoning them.
So, yeah, they're basically saying, look, you can't trust those psychiatry people.
Well, and they're saying don't take the medicine.
Yeah.
Now, the medicine does suppress psychotic symptoms. It does weaken the voices, you know, but it doesn't kill them. It doesn't cure anything. It just suppresses the symptoms like all these other drugs that they have. As soon as they go off them, those voices, you know, 95% of the time return and with a vengeance.
We got about 6 minutes left, so I want to ask you, have you found a way to discover if somebody has these voices? Is there like a test and or a way to get rid of them that you found?
Yes. What I have is what we found works. Now, this is very simple. You know, if they can't, what they do is they tell lies. Virtually everything they will tell you is a lie. Now, they may tell you some stuff that isn't to get you to buy into lies later. 90% of what they tell you will be a lie, and it will be a lie about yourself or somebody else. Right? So any thought that comes into your head that is negative about yourself or somebody else comes from them. And that's the same thing with schizophrenics. So Sherry, the gal I told you about earlier,
right?
I met her while working in the prison. She had one of the biggest prison, what do you call it, reform sites in the U.S. And I knew her for 10 years before she told me that she had heard voices as a young woman. Now, once she did that, I was like shocked because she was one of the most spiritually advanced people I've ever seen. You really ought to interview her. What she found was exactly what I found, was that the voices were liars, that virtually everything they told these people were lies, and they had access to their memory to bring up all this dirt and throw it in their faces. What she did is she took all the stuff that I knew and she put it into one program. So this is like the 1,000-pound bomb out of a whole field of 250s. If the person hearing voices will realize that they are not themselves, so they have to make it to that point first. And once they make it to that point and they realize these voices are not who they are, that they're entities, they're separate, then they can hit with what Sherry calls the That's a Lie program. Every time that they hear that thought say something bad about themselves or somebody else, respond with That's a Lie. That's a Lie. That's a Lie. And they can't grip, they can't get a hold if they're not believed. So if you don't believe what they're telling you, they start to weaken. Now, along with that, there's a lot of other stuff. Stay away from anything negative. Don't watch negative television shows. Don't watch horror movies. Stay away from negative people. Don't read negative books or watch negative movies. Anything negative feeds them. You need to get on a positive spiritual path and stay there, whatever that path is. And I wonder about the exorcist stuff, because if the person doesn't do the work themselves and they don't change their frequency of thinking and they're still thinking negative, they're going to draw these things back. And that's what I found, is that if we got rid of them and that person didn't replace their thinking and change their channel to something more positive, these things would come back. They might not be the same ones, but they would return. So I'd be real interested to see what percentage of the voices that the exorcists get rid of actually return, because I've found that the case. Yeah. And the Bible actually says that, you know, once you clean the house, you better fill it with something good or these things will come back tenfold. And I've actually seen that happen.
I could find out that information. I'll contact them, and because it's an interesting question, I'd be interested in that as well. And
I don't know if they keep touch with these guys, but that would be interesting to know. Yeah. So what they're actually doing is they are emotional parasites. They have to generate negative emotional energy for them to feed. And that's why they inject those nasty, ugly thoughts into your head. And schizophrenics' minds are full of these negative, awful thoughts. You know, they're going to kill you. They're following you. People are talking behind your back. They don't really love you. They're just telling you that. You can't believe anything they say. You know, your mother's really plotting against you. She doesn't love you really. I mean, your husband is cheating on you, or your wife is cheating on you. I mean, all those negative, awful kind of things, those are all inserted by these things.
Well, I can imagine that you have – I wonder if these things work in concert, like one's working on the wife, one's working on the husband, and they're trying to drive people against each other. I mean, it could happen.
Well, they drive people against each other, and they do work in concert. Sometimes there's three or four. Some of them there's hundreds in a single person, and the ones that have that many, they're not likely to recover easily. But there's only once or twice where I interviewed a schizophrenic who also had a schizophrenic girlfriend, and that interaction was fascinating. Because you know, the voices couldn't hear the other voices. They couldn't talk to the other voices. But they were both hearing voices independently.
That's interesting. Well, Jerry Marzinski, I want to thank you very much. You're totally invited to come back at any time. And if you have a website or a book or any information, we got about a minute to go. Go ahead and give that information out.
Well, we're working on a book. We're hoping to have it done, an e-book for Amazon in probably in about 2 months. And when that's done, I'll contact you. But we do have a Facebook site for people who hear voices and they're talking to one another. And that is Engineering Sanity, I believe is the name of it. And then Sherry's got a website, and that's called keyholejourney.com. You go to the psychic section. I forgot what they call it. You know, it's like the Ghostbuster guys. What do they call that?
Paranormal?
Paranormal, that's exactly. You go to the paranormal section, and then under that, go down to, that's where you can find her. That's a live program. And that will help anybody who is hearing voices right now. Download that program and put it to use. And the voices will resist you. They'll try to get you to lose it, to not use it. But that program will weaken the voices, and if you use it consistently, in a lot of cases, we've got feedback that the voices actually left when the person used it consistently. But we've got a lot of articles down under her paranormal section, and we got a lot of videos. The Swedenborg Off the Left Eye show will go into Swedenborg's teaching. I've got a number of videos there, and Swedenborg brings up that these things are evil spirits, and he talks about them and how they affect people also.
Right. Okay, thank you, everyone. Jerry Marzinski, have a wonderful weekend, and thank you very much for joining, sir.
You're more than welcome.
All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks a lot. Stay tuned for Jay Parker, and we're out of here.
Today that their population is evolving rapidly and advancing into a fifth dimensional consciousness. They are seeking peace with all cosmic cultures.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not.